First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out to us in the Discord room. You can catch the link to that off of the Beekeeping for Newbies, newbees.com homepage. Should be right over there on the left-hand side for you if you'd like to join us over there. Today's warm-up song is going to be Suspicious Minds, brought to you by the King Elvis Presley. And no, I'm not going to release me singing these warm-up songs. I'm trying to grow the channel and not get everyone to tune out. Actually, one of the reasons I thought about doing that just for fun, you know, we can't go on together, you know, like a little bit of a, you know, going all in with it. But the problem is the music in the background, when I syndicate to YouTube, they will hit me with a copyright strike for playing the song actually live or so people can hear it. So we're not going to do that. That's about the best you're going to get right there. Now, like I mentioned before on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage there, I just uploaded a new document to the download section. It's talking about the effectiveness of expired Amitraz or Apivar versus non-expired. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it is a good read. So if you have some that have the standard like 2-year expiration on them and you're wondering if they're still going to be effective, might be a good article for you to check out. It's in the download section of the page. While you're there, we also have downloads for the pollen color chart, decoding the behavior of a queenless colony, American foul brood diagnosis and treatment, AFB versus EFB, American versus European foul brood. First year startup cost breakdown. We got 5-frame nuke plans, swarm trap plans, colony collapse disorder 2024-2025 document, and probably a couple more things over there. So definitely check that out. For more detailed write-ups and things, I put together several articles over on bestbeekeepinggear.com. So if you can check those out on a variety of different subjects. If you need something added, I think somebody had messaged once in the Discord room and said, hey, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm like, you know what? We're going to go ahead and do an article on that and we'll get that written up. I can turn those out usually pretty quickly. So if you need more information on a subject, kind of a write-up explanation, just let me know, because really that's where all of those come from. They come from someone reaching out and saying, hey, I'm really kind of confused on this. Can you explain it better? And instead of me doing the same thing like 100 or 200 times, I'm just making articles, posting them, and then everybody can look at them. And I think that's working kind of a lot better. So check that out over there and let me know if we need to get something added. And lastly, before we jump into everything today, we are 100% listener funded. So please consider supporting our work through the Buy Me a Coffee. If money's tight, which I certainly understand, listening to the podcast through YouTube actually helps me out. I'm not focusing a lot of energy right there right now this year because I just don't have the bees at the house, but being able to get the channel monetized would be nice, and listening there would help us get to the 4,000 watch hours that we need. And we're also about 20 subscribers short of 1,500, so that's very cool as well. But yeah, you can listen there. That's certainly very helpful. Okay, today we're talking about four things, unless my ADD kicks in and we get a little sidetracked, which is certainly a possible thing. But we're going to talk about some observations. I was hanging out on YouTube the other day because, I don't know, it's kind of my sole source of information. When I want to learn something new, I just, you know, type it in, okay, how do you do whatever, and it's really helpful. And sometimes, of course, being in the beekeeping field, I have a lot of things that pop up beekeeping related, and most of the time I just look at them and kind of roll my eyes and be like, all right, and I move on. But I kind of snapped the other day and I was like, all right, we're gonna make a note of some things. Just a couple things I want to pass along that is out in videos. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. The next on the list is I want to talk to you guys about the Master Beekeeper program. And I haven't talked about it much at all. And I've kind of been more reserved about it here on this platform just because I want to make sure things are in line with my expectations. I want to make sure that Everything is the way it needs to be before I start talking about it too much. And I think we're there. So I want to talk to you about that a little bit. I also want to cover my 2026 experiments list. This is something I've been growing this list for a while. And we're going to talk about that. And lastly, just kind of what's going on with me and why things have been a little disrupted lately on the scheduling. I always like to get out the Monday and Thursday episode. Really hasn't been happening lately. There's a lot of reasons for that. One of them is kind of a seasonal thing. Honestly, like you can watch the numbers drop by about 30% between April and July. And it's kind of sad because everything starts to get more quiet and people aren't talking as much and the email traffic drops. And it's the cyclical nature. You know, January through July is really busy, and then August through December, it kind of slows down. But just kind of talking about some of those updates and things I've got going on to help better explain why I'm not putting things out with the frequency that I want to, but we've got plans for all of it. All right, the first topic of the day. So over the weekend, I sacrificed some of my time, like permanently lost forever time, to kind of go through some bad advice that I saw on YouTube. And I really just want to make sure you're not going down this path and following these things. Now, I want to say that always do what's best for you. You're going to find things that you're going to experiment with. You're going to try something and say, wow, that worked really well. And it could be completely contradictory to something I've told you, or you may hear someone else beekeeping in Mississippi or Montana or Nebraska or wherever they are. And they're like, hey, I did this thing. And you're like, wow, I'm going to try it too. And it works, but maybe it doesn't work where I am. That's the one thing that is so frustrating about beekeeping is things that work really well in one place will sometimes not work at all somewhere else. So you kind of have to, I think the biggest part about becoming a good beekeeper is learning what things are universal. You know, there's things that we know what the life cycle development is of a queen or a worker or a drone. Those things are universal. Lots of other things are not so universal, and that's where it becomes tricky. So while it seems like I'm picking on people, I'm really not. And I appreciate anybody who's willing to put a video out and say, hey, you know what? I'm trying, right? This is what I'm doing. And I don't necessarily know if it's right or wrong, but I'm going to try. I still give them the credit for putting the effort out there. They're trying to help people. There's nobody out there who's going, oh man, I'm going to mess with these people today. Now, I do have a lot of ideas in my mind about some videos that I want to do that are just where it's literally flashing up, like, don't do this on the screen, just for a joke, just to be fun. But like I said, everybody I know is going into it with the best of intentions, but I'm going to talk about some of the things that I think could be done differently. All right, the first one is someone had decided that since it's about to be a warm week coming up in the next week, this is what they specifically said in their video, that you need to ventilate the hive. And they opened the outer cover. And in between the inner and outer cover at the front kind of middle area, they put a piece of tape down, like a two-sided tape, and a metal disc about the size of a coin. And then they set the outer cover down on top of that to, quote, allow the hot air to escape. Now, as I always tell you guys, you know, repeatedly, when in doubt, look to the tree. So where in the tree do you prop the top of the tree open to release heat? Well, you don't. I know you've heard me talk about the vented inner cover that I have, that I use, and that I like. I think it does help getting some of the hotter air out. I think that using a screened bottom board does help with ventilation. All of these things are nice to haves, and in some cases can prevent a colony from absconding if they get too hot. But you can also add more space to the cavity by adding an empty box. There's, you know, making sure water sources are available. There's a lot of things that you can do that don't require you opening the hive up. But what that does, as the gentleman gave in his example here with propping this open, is you're now opening it up for an easy access for wax moth, ants, beetles, you know, like whatever wants to go in there can literally just walk in. That top of the hive area is not really monitored. Bees prefer an entrance. Like when scout bees are out looking for a new place to swarm to, they're looking for a single entrance, usually around that inch and a half kind of size, maybe even 2 inches, and at the lower third of the cavity. That's their preference when they're trying to find a new hive. So do what you can to mimic your hive setups based on what the bees actually do. But anytime you're propping up that outer cover like that, you're just inviting things to come in. All right, the next person mentioned the idea of removing all entrance reducers. He said, hey, it's getting hot. Got to remove all the entrance reducers. And Now, in his defense, he did acknowledge that removing the entrance reducer could increase the likelihood of robbing. And so he didn't do that like on his first colony. But the problem is that even a strong colony can have things enter that you really don't want entering. So consider, you know, tightening it down a little bit. Or if you really want the ventilation, if you're like, oh, I just want more air to come through, cool. Use number 8 hardware cloth. In fact, while we're talking about that right now, I'm going to add that to my video to-do list, number 8 hardware cloth entrance reducer. Okay, that is on now on the list, and I think that'll be good. But yeah, if your concern is, well, I want more airflow in there, I want them to have maximum air, but keep the entrance, you know, as small as you can, because a lot of people really get kind of wrapped up on got to have them wide open all the time, got to have maximum ability for bees to move in and out. What's in the tree, right? Go back to the tree. Okay, the next one. It's good to add a second entrance up top to give meat bees a more direct path to the honey supers. False, right? If a colony in a tree finds a second hole higher up in their preferred location, wherever they've decided that they want to be, they will just propolize the whole thing shut. They want, like I mentioned earlier, they want that down the lower third of that cavity, or they're going to close it up. So also, nectar isn't the only thing being brought in. So it's not just the bees go out and they're coming back with nectar and everything has to go up top. They're bringing back, you know, things that they would use to make propolis, the sticky, you know, the sticky things that are used to make propolis. They're bringing back water. They're bringing back pollen. So it's not just nectar. And of course, it always, as usual, it's going to create this additional entry point for things that can come in and cause trouble. The top is a less defended area naturally, and that's just not necessarily going to be the best idea. Now, as you may recall, there is the vented inner cover that I use that I've also mentioned a few minutes ago. With that, it actually has a built-in top entrance. And the first thing I do whenever I install them is I staple hardware cloth across that entrance. I don't want the bees coming in and out up there. Okay, the next thing was kind of interesting. This is actually the last one I had. I only watched a couple videos, but I wanted to share them with you guys. And this gentleman was saying that we've talked recently about follower boards, which just act as kind of a spacer. So it's great for your horizontal hives to say, okay, beyond this, bees, you got to work with this area. Nothing, you know, beyond this is going to be accessible to you. So just kind of consolidating the space a little bit without having to remove everything behind it. So this gentleman recommended getting a 10-frame setup and putting a follower board in frames positions, you know, 1 and 10. And he said that, one, that it increases airflow, it keeps the hive cooler, and it reduces diseases. So I feel like this kind of opened him up a little bit for some criticism here, but I'll go with kind of the low-hanging fruit about reducing diseases. I have no idea what that means, right? So we're basically taking space away from positions 1 and 10. Now, I think what does make sense is if this follower board that you're using is a solid piece, I mean, if it's just solid wood, or if it's a frame that you have inserted a piece of foam insulation, or you've done something to make this thing an actual insulating component in some way, right? I mean, just the airspace in there by itself is not going to provide a lot of value. But if you can fill that airspace with something insulative. Anyway, if you can fill something in there in that space, that's going to bring some value, I think, to you, some level of R value. But to just have a blocker, I'm not really sure. Now, if his point is reducing temperature by allowing airflow, you do now have this space on the side. So if you're just blocking, frames 1 and 10 are blocking, and there is open space on the sides, that should allow for warm air to move up. But it all gets to the top, and then it's going to kind of sit there. It's not flowing. It's not a situation where the bees are in the center, the air is flowing up, and then you have fans above 1 and 10 pushing the warmer air back down and out. Right? That's not happening. But I don't know that there's a lot of scientific basis to support that putting follower boards in frames 1 and 10 are going to make a big difference. But let's just say it does. Let's say that the gentleman is 100% correct and that it absolutely reduces air or increases airflow, keeps the hive cooler. It's not going to reduce the diseases. So, I mean, talk about deformed wing virus, acute bee paralysis virus, foul brood. like, how are these things getting better? Now, I can see where if you have moisture issues, so you're having problems with mold, you live in a really humid environment, and there's some maybe a little bit of mold showing up. But that's the kind of thing that can happen. I mean, like, I live in a very humid environment pretty much almost year round. When we've had occasionally some mold gets in, and the bees usually do a really good job of cleaning it up. It's usually a spring kind of thing when they're at their kind of weakest point and they're ramping up. They clean it up pretty quickly. Sometimes I'll take the frame out, put it in the freezer, and put a different frame in to let them work with that. And then I'll bring it back when they're stronger and let them clean it up. But I'm not seeing a lot of disease prevention there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get 1 full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC, used with permission.
All right, I am going to move over now to our next topic of the day here. This is the Master Beekeeper Program Updates. Originally, I had chosen a platform based on something I had used before for the whole course. So you go into the apprentice course. When I say the whole course, I should say it is a program. It is a 3-course program, apprentice, journeyman, master. And the apprentice program, or the apprentice course of the whole program, is the one that's getting released here in November. I was setting things up to run on a specific educational platform that I had used before. And I think I kind of messed up a little bit because it looked like it was doing everything I wanted it to do. I think it would have been fine if it was just, here are some videos, go watch the videos, let me know what you think, have a great day. But this course has a lot of things that need to be included with it for it to operate the way that it needs to. So one of those things that needs to happen is, let's talk specifically to the apprentice program. There is a requirement that you're going to have to light a smoker. Now, this being a distance learning program, which, again, we'll get into all the details. I've got a lot of details I'm going to put out with everything ahead of launch, probably in the September, October, time frame. So you'll have all the details on exactly how all this goes. But it'll be a virtual learning component. So you're going to have to light a smoker. So you're going to say, hey, it's me. How you doing? Here's me lighting a smoker. And that's a video. That's one video that is a requirement for you to complete. Well, you would have to go create a YouTube account or find a platform of some sort or upload to a Google Drive And then I have to somehow go and watch or observe or download. And that's kind of painful. So the platform that I'm moving to has an ability for you as part of an assignment is you're going to go in here, click a link, and you're going to upload the video. And that's for any video type assessments. The other component of it that is going to be really important to me is quizzes and exams. It's really easy to create a static test and say, here are 30 questions, you know, good luck. Well, I mean, I've got a program that I've been working on for a couple of years now, and I've got thousands of questions. Like across all of the program, it averages out to about 350 to 400 questions per course. So like I've got a pool of like 400 questions for the apprentice course. So I'm not going to ask anyone to answer 400 questions. So when you go in and you take the test, if you fail or you have, you know, a challenge and you have to retest that, you're not, I mean, you'll get a lot of the same questions, I'm sure, but you're not going to be getting an identical test. This original platform I was working with didn't have the ability to do that. And that's really, really important. Having the pool, also being able to have the feedback. You know, there were some that would tell you what your grade was, but didn't give you the details. And there's a lot of components around the testing and assessment. The number one thing to me, and the price doesn't matter to me, if I have to spend more money to get you more capability, then that's what I'm going to do. This platform actually ended up for the plan I'm looking at being a tiny bit, it's weird, it's either a tiny bit cheaper or a lot more expensive depending on how many total features that I bring into it. But as it stands right now, it looks like it's going to be a tiny bit cheaper for me and about 10 times better than what you would have had on the other platform. I am all about like your experience. When somebody purchases the course and they're going through it, it has to be a good experience. The video quality, the audio, the lessons, the organization of everything, it's got to be right. And I just feel like this other company really has it figured out. This is an area that I really struggled. I spent so much time going through the platforms and just beating them up and just, nope, not good enough, not good enough. And I finally am settled in here. So as a quick update on the kind of release dates and everything, the apprentice course is going to come out around 15 November, journeyman 15 May of next year. And then we're targeting May of 27 for the master course. There was no plan for the air quotes, you know, master craftsman course. It was brought up to me as something that might be of interest during our kind of peer review process. I'm just not sure that that's going to be a huge priority right now. If the demand exists, if people come back and say, got to have more, what I'm going to do is anybody who is part of the initial, you know, buy-in, anybody who says, look, I'm doing the whole program from the beginning and they sign up for it. If they do sign up for the complete program and that course is added later on, it'll automatically be included. See, there won't be an additional fee with that. So that's a good thing to know. You're kind of getting some future proofing there if the additional course is added. But as of now, it's just going to be the three. And if you hear some background noise, by the way, it has been thundering, lightning, and it's pouring down rain right now. I can hear it in my headphones. Not sure if you can hear it, but hopefully it's not too distracting. The third topic of the day here, 2026 experiments. So I've been talking about and growing my experiments list for a while. This is something that I can hear the rain. It's coming down so hard. I've been maintaining this list for a really long time. I keep adding to it. As we talk about things in the Discord room and people email me, I just keep adding these things to the list. So 2026 is the year we're really going to start tackling these and going through things. So as I roll out the new updated website, which has to happen in like September, August, September timeframe, I am migrating away from GoDaddy because they stole one of my domains. Quick sidebar here, I was using like a monthly program that included a domain with the hosting and domain hosting and email. I decided, you know, I'm not using that domain right now. I don't need the website, don't need the hosting. I just want to secure my domain. I told them I wanted to separate that and they said, well, it's a bundle. And they said, we can cancel it. And then within, you'll have a 30 or a 60 day window where you can just click a link. It'll be sent to you and you can just, you know, maintain the domain. It's no problem. And I was like, great. Week or so goes by. I never get the email. I reach out to them and they're like, oh yeah, it's up for auction. Like it's, you know, you didn't own the domain. It was part of your bundle and you canceled the bundle. And I was like, no. I canceled because you guys told me that I could and that I would get an email and that I would be able to get back to it. Long story short, they stole my domain and I lost the domain. So because of that, I'm done with GoDaddy and I'm moving on to another provider. So we are going to add an experiments section to that site, or you know, the new site as we roll it out. And I'm going to provide extensive details on all the activities taking place. So this is going to include videos that are going to be linked over to YouTube, as well as details on, you know, what the project is, what we're trying to accomplish, the methods, expected results, actual results, anything that I do that involves, you know, other sources. We're definitely going to cite all of our sources and keep everything as professional as we can to make sure that you can kind of do your own due diligence as you might be reviewing some of these things. Some of it is not going to be the most scientific. It's going to be based, you know, on a smaller sample size, you know, just something that I may casually observe. But there are other things that are going to be very detailed, spanning multiple sites over a longer period of time. The idea really is just to get people thinking about different ways of doing things, trying different ideas, trying to dispel rumors and sort things out between fact and fiction. Now, the very first project I'm working on is one I'm starting this fall. Most likely I'll really kind of ramp this up after the apprentice program is released. I've already purchased the hardware, so I'll be doing a little bit of some soldering and some programming to kind of bring it all together. But it's going to be a solution that allows for the collection of temperature, barometric pressure, humidity, all of that stuff is going to be placed inside the hive. So this season I'm testing it in the winter with empty hives. I'm testing for placement. Where does everything go? How is the data collected from multiple hives? How does the then collector node broadcast the data to me? Do I walk up? Right now, the plan is to walk up with like an iPad or a phone and Bluetooth or Wi-Fi connect, download all of that data. I also am thinking about maybe setting up a web server on like a Raspberry Pi that would run, you know, in a box. So I'll basically have a small solar panel connected to a battery with an, you know, the charge controller. That'll power the Raspberry Pi. I can walk up with phone, laptop, you know, whatever has a browser, open the browser, download the data, or just, you know, view the metrics and be able to see, you know, what all those temperature settings are looking like, or I'm sorry, all of the environmental settings are looking like. Because the idea behind it really for me is kind of twofold. One, I want to see how hot things are getting in the summertime to be able to then correlate that data with other activity. So as an example, people say, well, when should I expect my bees to beard? And I can say, well, I've seen when the outside temperature is this and the inside temperature is this based on my observations right around here. Or, you know, overwintering to me is really interesting because we know what the cluster temperature should be roughly. Well, the bees are going to cluster around my sensors, right? So I'm probably going to wrap them in hardware cloth or something to kind of protect them a little bit. That's something I got to figure out. But having multiple sensors in different areas of the hive are going to allow me to view exactly where the cluster is at any point in time through these sensors. Now, I'm sure you can say, well, Jeff, there's lots of companies out there doing these types of things already. It's true, but I think I spent $70, not including the Raspberry Pi that I already have, $70, just call it $100 with a small Pi Zero or, you know, whatever Raspberry Pi you want to use, maybe $100, $120, and I'm going to be able to monitor three hives with one collector node for $100. And this part of it is just the fun. Like, can I buy something from somebody else? Yeah, probably. But if I don't know how they set it up, can't modify anything, can't make it the way I want it, that's not as fun. So that project is starting this fall into the winter. And hopefully I'll be getting that into hives, some test hives in the spring. So let's run through a couple more things that I have on the list for my experiments. One of them is the effectiveness of fondant for overwintering. I've told people several times, I think at my first season I put it in there, the bees didn't touch it. Second season they ate about half of it. Didn't seem to have a major effect on them. Pollen patties for overwintering, same thing, I've put them in over winter, taking them apart in the spring, and they're dried clumps of nothing, but sometimes some of them have been consumed. I've still found better results adding them on like around February as like a early spring kind of stimulant. We're going to do some testing around both of those fondants, pollen patties. We're also going to be doing some testing with quilt boxes with, you know, what a lot of people will take a box and throw a bunch of like pine shavings and things in it. Whatever you're using as an insulator, once it gets wet, it's pretty useless. But we're going to try using foam blocks. We're going to try using like a regular insulation that we know is going to get wet, And we're also going to try using the pine, whatever, you know, whatever, like a hamster feed, and just hope that a mouse doesn't get up there and make a house out of it. We'll try a couple of different ways of testing the quilt boxes for folks who are big fans of that. Now, there's another one here that's it's pretty simple, but someone in our Discord room had mentioned what they had observed, and a few others had said that they agreed with that, that bees have become aggressive when being blown on, you know, like blowing on the bee makes them aggressive. Now, when I say this, people are like, why in the world would you blow on a bee? If you're holding a frame up with both hands and you're trying to look at a spot right in front of you and it's covered with bees, you can just blow on the bees. You don't have to like hurricane force wind or anything. Just blow on them and they will move out of the way. I've done this for years. It's never been a problem for me, but a couple people have experienced some aggression. So I'm going to do some experimentation. You know, we know that you can put your hands on them, you can touch them, and they'll just move away from your hands. And that's a great way to get them to move. But we'll do some experiments again. How do you really measure it, right? Different colonies have different temperament. But what I want to prove is like go up there with nothing on my face, blow on them and see what they do. Like I don't think that they're going to get aggressive with me. But if my eyes are swollen shut in a video, you'll know I was wrong. So the next one I have on the list is I've always been told as far as moving hives go, 5 inches or 5 miles. Now, somebody in an email, nice gentleman out of Australia, really good discussion with him, but he said, hey, I've always been told 3 feet or 3 miles. And I'm like, man, that's way too far. So we're going to prove it. We're going to go ahead and we're going to do some moving within my yard. And I may do some of these. I'm going to try and do these experiments as much as I can in duplicative fashion. So I'll be doing them at the house and at the apiary property as well. Got work going on down there as far as trying to develop things for the nonprofit. So that's kind of some things we can try to work in tandem. But we're gonna move. We're gonna go do a 3 foot move with one way, a 5 inch move with one the other way, and we'll see what works and try it a couple of different times and see what we can document. Now, one thing that we're gonna do is we're not gonna do this, I don't think, with honey supers per se. But when starting out new colonies, this is the next experiment here, is I'm going to take, let's say I have a deep and I got a nuke in there and they're starting to grow. Instead of adding the new boxes up above, we're going to start adding them down below. So we'll add a deep below that. We'll see how they handle that. Then we'll throw a honey super on top. So we can compare that to all the other, you know, hives that we're managing in the traditional kind of way of just supering by adding resources on top. Well, we're gonna mix it up a little bit because we know that starting brand new, they're gonna draw from the top down, and we know that they're gonna start with, you know, brood first, and then they'll start as they have more and more space, they'll start adding in room for comb to the sides, and then ultimately the original brood space will get replaced by nectar and ultimately honey, and then they'll start drawing more brood down below that. So I don't know. I want to just try and see if this is going to end up being a more natural way of letting them align things and grow and develop in the way that they want to. So we'll see how that works out. Oh, and I also want to play around with the same thing on the supering side. So we'll add our first honey super in, and when it's time to add the second one, we're going to sandwich that in between the top deep. If it's only a single deep, that's fine. If it's a double deep, it'll be between the top deep and the honey super that's already there. At the same time, while we're supering an adjacent colony traditionally on top, see if we see anything different. And again, lots of variables, right? You have two different colonies, that's a big variable. But maybe if you had a larger sample size, you had 10 colonies where you did it one way and 10 you did it the other, and then you could make a measurement, we'll do the best we can. All right, the next one that I have on the list is one that I think is a big issue, and a lot of people have said, no, this is all you got to do. If you move a colony, people say, well, if you move it, but you throw a bunch of debris up in front of the entrance, that forces them to reorient. And so you can move a colony 100 feet, and by obscuring all the stuff at the entrance and you force the reorientation, that fixes the problem. So we're going to do that. We're going to do some of this, and we're going to record the location of where they were, where they've been moved to, see if bees come back or not. I'm 100% convinced they're still going back, because in my mind, the bees are in location A, their original location. They're going to leave that location. They're flying around. They're doing what they do. They come home. Now you move them somewhere else. They leave the hive. They go, oh, something's different. And they can reorient all they want as to what the hive looks like. But when they fly out into the world to do what it is they do, on their return path, their brain is going to autopilot them back to the old location. I'm convinced of this, but we're going to prove it. So that's on the list. Now, this one I have on the list is about feeding bees junk. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times I like to provide some balance with some pollen substitute or maybe even mix the pollen substitute with some sugar syrup, and you make a nice little kind of pollen patty, like a little homemade pollen patty. And just trying to give them a real balance, because they need about 10 different, you know, essential amino acids that you got to get for them. But there's different amino acids and there's different elements that you're finding within pollen at different times of year that's important. Like in the spring, you really need that that pollen to develop and grow young larvae, right? You need to have all those rich nutrients for larval development. As you get to the fall, you need them to be packing on fat. They need to be, more carb heavy than they are pollen. So there's different formulas and things that are needed at different times of year. I'm talking about taking some colonies that are side by side, basically, and saying, okay, these three over here, we're supplementing them in the way that we always have, with pollen patties and with sugar syrup. And then the ones right next to them, we're giving them absolutely nothing. They're living 100% off of the environment, unless they get to a point where they're not going to survive. And then maybe we move them out of the study or whatever we do. And then there's the ones that we just constantly feed them sugar syrup all year. Now, this is going to be a little challenging, right? How do you measure the health? I mean, you can do some really deep analysis of, like, you know, dissecting and analyzing body composition of different things. So it's going to be really tough to figure out that part. But I really, truly believe that a healthier colony, nutritionally healthier colony, is going to manage varroa and other disease better. So I don't think we're going to be at it when we compare bees from Hive A and Hive B as an example in this, you know, well-balanced feed versus just junky sugar feed. You're going to look at them and they're going to look the same. But I think you're going to see better disease resistance, better hygienic behavior, like across the board, all genetics and everything else being the same. I think we're going to see better performance in the colonies that are getting a more balanced and healthier diet than those that are not. Now, next on the list is a hive heater. Someone had posted in the Discord and they're like, hey, what do you think of this hive heater? And immediately when I saw it, I thought, well, I don't want a heater in the hive. I want the bees to get down to a nice cool temperature where they can kind of just zone out and just relax and get through the season. But someone had pointed out, if you're getting in areas where it's really, really cold and some extremely cold temperatures, you don't necessarily want to heat them up to a point where they're hot. But maybe if you took them, let's just talk Celsius, because we do have a lot of Celsius, you know, listeners. I'll do the conversion as best I can in my brain here. But let's say you're at like minus 40 Celsius. Maybe if you can get the temperature up to like minus 5 or minus 10, or if you're on the Fahrenheit side, maybe instead of having your colony at like 5 degrees, maybe you get them up to, and I'm talking outside temps, but if you can get the equivalent of the outside temp of 5 degrees to maybe have an outside temp of 38 degrees, something like that, right? So if you're controlling the environment in a way that takes some of that extreme out of it, and again, how do you equate inside temperature versus outside? I recognize that. But if you're just finding a way to, if you take those inside measurements and say that maybe inside the center of the cluster is, let's say, 92, 93 degrees, maybe the bees on the outside would be 50, talking Fahrenheit. If it's really cold, you know, maybe the cluster is maintaining its temperature, but maybe the outer bees are getting cooler, or they're going to have to rotate more often, because those outer bees are going to rotate back towards the center of the core, and the edge, those mantle bees on the outside, have to rotate in more often because of how much cooler it is. They're going to use more energy. So there's some things here that I think might be really cool to look at and check out as it relates to a hive heater. I'm just not sure that we're going to be able to make the investment in that, and we got to figure out the criterion, but it's on the list, and we'll see what happens. Now, this next one is a point somebody brought up the other day about a metal queen excluder getting hot, you know, in the summertime. Like, how does that impact the bees? And when they first said this, I was like, well, it doesn't impact them at all. It's inside the hive. But remember, if you're using a metal excluder and you have the metal exposed on the outside and the sun is kind of beating down on that metal, you will have some conductive heat that, you know, as the metal just conducts that heat across to the inside. So this is something that's on the list. I'm going to add some of those temperature sensors. We're going to try to take some measurements on it. Again, two hives side by side. One of them will have a wooden framed queen excluder. We'll put on the next one, we'll go ahead and put a plastic queen excluder. And then the third one, we'll do a metal queen excluder. We'll put some temperature probes on them, do some measurements, and then we'll go ahead and pull each one off. And we'll pop them off. We'll take some very specific, you know, like laser-based pointer temperature kind of things to top, middle, left, and we'll record all the temperatures. And then we'll see, you know, are we getting a significant, I think it should be warmer. It would make sense that it would be warmer, but is it significant enough to make a difference? Because remember, the inside temperature of the hive for brood production is really going to be in that 92 to 95 degree range Fahrenheit already. So I guess that's what, like 32, 33, 34, or something like that on the Celsius side. So it's already going to be pretty warm. But how much conductive heat do we get through that? I want to find out the answer to that. The next one on the list is about mite washers. There's two things I want to test. One of them is the dish soap method with alcohol method, or I should say not with, but dish soap, alcohol, and then sugar shake. In the past, I did a couple of sugar shakes. I did not like the results, and I have not done one in probably a decade. I don't think they're very effective. I used to always do alcohol. A few years ago, someone was like, hey, dish soap is kind of cool. I was like, whatever. I kind of blew it off. And then I did a few of them, and I was like, hey, you know what? This is actually working pretty well. And I did not find a measurable difference to say 5, 10, whatever percent difference. I'm not seeing it. So I feel like the dish soap is just as accurate and significantly cheaper. So I'm going to do videos on how you do each of those. That's obviously already in my to-do list. But we'll do videos on how to do all of them. And I want to do a separate one on my method. Now, the method that I do, people are probably going to say, it's wrong. You can't do that. It's not right. But I'm going to go ahead and describe it for you, what I've done for a long time. I still do this a little bit. I'm afraid to admit it because I don't want anybody to bully me. But what I do is I will pull a couple of brood frames and I will put them on a hanger, or if I have an assistant, have the assistant hold it, but put them on a hanger. And I have a measuring cup because you want to get a half a cup of bees. I get one that's a little bit wider of a cup, but it has more depth to it, and I mark it. And what I'll do is I will take a gloved hand and I will go to a brood frame and I'll bring the cup up against it and I will sweep down the bees that are on brood, sweep down on one side, go to the other frame, sweep down on the other side. And once I have them in, there's a couple different things you can do here. You could spray them down with a little bit of some sugar spray to keep them from flying. But if you don't want to do that, they're nurse bees. They're not flying a whole lot already anyway. But I do that kind of sweep technique to just sweep them off the frame into this cup. I'll show you the whole thing in a video. And then from that, I toss them into the mite washer. And then I go ahead and do the mite wash. And then I do my count. I count the number of dead bees. And then I do the math from that. So if I have 360, then I redo the math based on 360 and not based on 300. So however many you actually have in your sample size, do the math to get your per 100 number. But counting the bees afterwards kind of important so you can know where you need to put your marks. You know, maybe use like dry erase or something the first couple of times so that you can figure out where your mark needs to be. Or if you're using an actual, this is where the more traditional method works better, of taking the frames of nurse bees, shaking them into a tub of some sort, then shake the tub down to a corner and then scoop your half a cup out of that. That's why that half cup approach works really well, because you've got them in a place where they can easily be scooped out like that. But I'm telling you, I did this for a long time, just literally right off the frame directly into my little container. And maybe that's kind of frowned upon. I'm sure somebody's going to tell me why it's not good, but I did that for a long time. All right, but we'll show you all of those. Those are all going to be spring of 26 kind of things that we're going to look at. And the next one is hive beetles. A lot of people have said, hey, if you put your hives in the sun, you can reduce hive beetle. Now, if you think about it, hive beetles, they're in the hive, right? They fly. These little beetles fly. They land at your hive. They go inside the hive. They lay their eggs. The eggs can hatch very quickly in a few days. You're going to have all these little larvae crawling around, destroying things. Once they've had their fill, they crawl out the front door. They drop to the ground. And then they will pupate in the ground and pop right back out. So if you have an area where you have bees and you've had hive beetles, they're going to come out in full force the next year, or within 30, 40 days, however long it takes them to pupate. So if you're finding them in June or July, they're going to be popping right back out July, August, and it's going to get even worse. So a lot of people have said, hey, if you put them in the sun, they can't make it to the ground safely. I have not seen that. I have had them in the full sun. I've had them in partial sun. I have not seen what I would say to be a measurable difference in hive beetle numbers, because once they get to your apiary, once they know it's there, they can just fly to the shade, or fly from the shade to the sun, or wherever it is. again, it's not the issue with the larvae outside the hive. Yes, that definitely impacts the future generations of hive beetles, but the problem is the ones that are already in. That's the big issue. But we're going to do a couple of experiments, and you know, once we have some hive beetle, okay, you're going to be in the shade, you're going to be in the sun, and you know, we'll just try to pull some rough numbers and see what we can do. We'll put hive beetle traps in, we'll monitor, we'll do some counting, and again, these are all things that we'll be tracking. And another thing we're going to do, this one's just kind of a fun thing. There's not a lot of science behind it that I know of or anything that I can scientifically measure. But we're going to have a few colonies that we're going to leave them completely open as far as queen excluders go. A lot of people are strong advocates for not using them. They say that it damages the bees' wings as they pass through repeatedly. They say that it has negative impacts to honey crop and honey yields. So we're going to do some informal kind of analysis, but I just want to see how well it works. I think it's kind of a neat thing to do. I've always used queen excluders. So why not try without them? Well, I say always. I mean, a lot of pollination contracts and things, you're just throwing a couple of deeps on and you don't even have a honey super or a queen excluder. But for, you know, at-home, regular hobbyist kind of management, I've always had them. The other one I have here is my queen round robin. A lot of people will say, that, oh, you can never just introduce a queen. She's got to be in a cage. We're going to show you that that's not an issue. I'm going to have multiple hives set up that are queenless. We are going to take a queen and we're going to remove her, a laying queen from a hive, a colony that is queen right. We're going to take her out. We're going to walk her over to a queenless colony. We're going to direct introduce her and set her free in there and let her go to work. And we're going to do that. And then once she has time to go in there and prove she's still alive, we're going to take her out of that colony. We're going to walk her over to another one, drop her in another one. And we're going to do this to prove that that a mated queen, a queenless colony, is dying for a mated and laying queen. They want that laying queen, and they will graciously accept her presence when she shows up, and we're going to prove that. Now, I'm not telling you to take a queen out that is a laying queen and healthy and everything's fine, and then walk up with a different one and drop that one in, right? You need to give them time to understand that they are queenless. So do this experiment yourself if you want, but give it 24 hours. Take that queen out, you know, whatever, Friday morning, and then Saturday afternoon, try this experiment. But we're going to do this, and we're going to do a couple of different things. We may, even if we have some extra queens, I hate to say this because it's every life is important, but we may do some experiments with a couple of different things around different introduction things that we can and maybe can't get away with to prove or disprove certain things. It just depends on how many total hives we have this year. I think this might be the last. Like I said, I've got this on the list. I call it a queen sandwich. So a lot of times if it's time for swarming, the queen cells are there, they are capped. A lot of times it is very difficult to stop them from swarming. They've already decided it's going to happen. And some people have come in and said, oh my gosh, these capped queen cells are everywhere. Let me destroy these. They take them all out. And then the queen swarms the whole colony. You know, they swarm a day or two later. And they're like, well, what happened? I mean, there's no queen cells. They didn't get the memo that you took all the queen cells out. And that queen was already planning on leaving anyway. So she's gone. And now you've got no queen cells to replace or make a new queen with. So what I want to do is say, okay, in that kind of scenario, if I make what I call a queen sandwich, I'm going to take a deep, put a queen excluder, another deep, a queen excluder, and a honey super, and we're going to put the queen right in the middle. If I destroy those queen cells or I move them to another colony and then I leave everything else business as usual, I wonder if you guys can hear the rain. It is coming down like crazy. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I'm just hoping the power doesn't go out because I don't have a backup power supply on my recording equipment right now. Ugh. But hey, it's still Amazon Prime week, so I can probably make that happen. Anyway, so my queen sandwich here is going to allow us to take those queen cells out, move them somewhere else, but make sure the queen stays behind. Does this work? All right, so there's a lot of these things going on at the same time. There's a lot of overlap with them. It's going to be busy, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I might have a couple more here. I'm not going to keep going all day. This is just kind of a sample of all the things that we have going on for 2026. I'm not sure exactly how many. I think we're going to have somewhere between 10 and 20 nukes here. Okay, last topic on the list today. So that's a pretty good sample of all the things we've got teed up for 2026. It's really going to come down to, you know, do we have 10, maybe 20 nukes? I'm not sure how many we're going to get in here. We'll see what the budget will allow. The more funding that we have, the more money that's available, the greater success that we have with the release of the program in October and November. The more that's here, like 90% of it's probably getting reinvested. We've got stuff to invest in to build up the hives down there at the Healing Hive Project. So it's just thehealinghiveproject.org if you want to check that out. But we've got to build the whole apiary there. We've got to do everything. So that's going to be ramping up. But every penny, I'm not going to say every penny, but 85, 90% of everything that's coming in is going right back in to reinvest into buying colonies, doing more experiments, and just trying to have some fun. Okay, last topic of the day. So what's been going on with me? Why have I not been getting out the Monday and Thursday videos? What do you mean you're not going to be putting out as much content over the coming weeks? So I've got daughter number two getting married in 5 weeks, which is still pretty crazy, but everything is good. She is back from India. I didn't tell you guys about that because I didn't want to bring it up or talk about anything. Just I'm kind of an OPSEC kind of guy, so I didn't, you know. But she made it back from India, which I was completely losing my mind because I'm watching the flight path, and like the original flight path had her about 50, 80 miles away from Tehran as we were actively deciding that it would be a good opportunity to go ahead and bomb them. So they redirected her over Saudi Arabia, and then it was looking like they were going to send her up through Israel. I'm like, hey, maybe not the best idea. They redirected down, I think down near Sinai, up around Egypt through the Suez area, came up through the Mediterranean and went that route instead. But I completely lost my S. Like the whole time she was flying home, I was just losing my mind. So I was up till 4 a.m. when she landed in London, and then I finally went to bed. So she is back home. The next big thing she's got on her agenda is her wedding. So I've got a little bit going on with that, getting that wrapped up. My grad program, I'm in week 6 of 8 right now with one more 8-week term coming up. I'm working on a huge research project right now that is taking a lot of my time and energy. It's a really cool, fun project. I will be happy to share it with you if you're interested in it when it's all said and done. But it's kind of a cool thing that I'm working on. And that whole program is done in about 3 months. So we're going to see what comes up after that. Like I mentioned before, the Master Beekeeper program work that's going on. And I still got a couple things, odds and ends around that I'm trying to get fixed up, cleaned up, and sold. It's just a busy, busy time kind of across the board. But if you need something, you're hitting a roadblock, you can always email. Full disclosure, email response priorities, I have to give those to the Buy Me a Coffee members that we have. Otherwise, I mean, sometimes I have days where it's like 150 or 200 emails, and my full-time job would be just email response. And I love it. I really, really enjoy the dialogue and hearing the stories and talking to everybody. But if I just do that, I'm never going to get anything else done. But definitely feel free to drop me a message. It just might take a couple of days sometimes. Discord room's a little bit better because while I'm working, whenever I'm on the laptop, I usually keep the Discord up. So if you at message me and I'm online, I usually respond pretty quickly. But one way or another, if you have a problem, you need some help, definitely don't hesitate to reach out. And on that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up for the day. If you are finding any value at all in the content, please let us know and consider supporting us however you can. And if you can't do it financially, I'll always take a little bit of prayer because the last time I checked, that is still free. All right, everybody, take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.